You're listening to CNA 938 World Report. I'm Benji Hyer in London.
And I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington. One of the most influential voices on America's political right has been silenced. Rush Limbaugh, the conservative talk radio host, died on Wednesday at the age of 70. He'd been fighting lung cancer. Since the late 1980s, his programme was appointment listening for millions of conservative Republicans. And as our US Bureau Chief Simon Marks reports, he paved the way for a host of other conservatives who now dominate America's airwaves.
It is hard to overstate the impact that Rush Limbaugh had on the modern United States. And to describe him simply as a broadcaster is to mischaracterize his achievement. He was a seismic political figure here and one who never stood for election. Twitter today is awash with deeply mixed emotions about his passing. He was as controversial as he was influential, at times racist, misogynistic, and invariably opportunistic. But he recreated talk radio in the US and turned it into a right-wing political powerhouse. From the 1980s onwards, you could fly to any corner of this country, turn on AM radio, and hear his voice booming out over hundreds of stations from coast to coast.
I actually think that we're trending toward secession.
That was Limbaugh as recently as December the 11th, suggesting political polarization in the US runs so deep, the country may not be able to stay together.
I see more and more people asking, what in the world do we have in common with the people who live in, say, New York? And that it can't go on this way. There cannot be a peaceful coexistence.
He later walked back those remarks, but just weeks later, President Biden, in his inaugural address, specifically pushed back against any notion of disunion, dismembering the United States. Such was the impact of Limbaugh on the political conversation here, right up to the end.
I have been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer. There are going to be days that I'm not going to be able to be here.
That was just over a year ago, but he stayed on air defying the odds. He'd battled ill health before, had become profoundly deaf in the middle of his career, his ability to stay on radio only salvaged by the use of cochlear implants. He became addicted to prescription drugs, had a string of spectacularly failed relationships, was married four times, but none of that dimmed the ardour of his conservative supporters. Among them, the man about whom he was initially suspicious, but came to embrace politically like a limpet, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, leading the morning today on Fox News.
His fight was very, very courageous, and he was very, very sick. And, you know, from diagnosis on, it was just something that was not going to be beaten. But he was fighting till the very end.
That, by the way, Donald Trump's first interview since he left the White House, embracing the opportunity created by Rush Limbaugh's demise further to re-establish his own political relevance. Rush Limbaugh did not create talk radio in the U.S. You can find his antecedents as far back as the 1930s.
Father Coughlin is now prepared to speak to you on the subject of Americanism, neither Nazism nor communism.
Father Charles Coughlin was the grandfather of talk radio here, an isolationist who became one of the country's most important political voices, entrancing millions of Americans who, in many cases, had only just purchased their first wireless.
Americans fought a civil war to preserve the unity of this nation. How many Americans are there this New Year's Day who are willing to engage in a more important civil conflict, if necessary, to preserve the democratic liberties of this country?
In the 1940s and 50s, Walter Winchell enjoined Senator McCarthy's anti-communist witch hunts. In the 60s and 70s, Paul Harvey paved the way for the political success of Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. But Rush Limbaugh recreated the medium for the modern era.
Freedom is killed off by people claiming that the greater good or the general will or the betterment of the community requires speech patrol.
An early stirring there of today's debate about cancel culture. In reality, Limbaugh didn't mind speech patrol, provided he was the only cop on the beat. The White House press secretary said that President Biden is sending his condolences to Rush Limbaugh's family, but has no plans to say any more than that. The president's supporters in homes across the country may tonight quietly choose to celebrate Rush Limbaugh's death. But his style of radio programming lives on, and they will be making a big mistake if they conclude that his influence on the political landscape here will die along with him. I'm Simon Marks in Washington.
Next this morning, the European Union has placed a fresh vaccine order, almost doubling the number of doses it'll receive from Pfizer and BioNTech. The news comes as Europe's vaccine rollout continues to trail other parts of the world, like the UK, the US and Europe. But there's growing pressure to get more jabs out sooner and quicker, particularly as infectious new mutations of COVID-19 emerge in more and more parts of the continent. I spoke to our correspondent in Berlin, Trent Murray. I asked whether this additional order was expected and how many more doses we're talking about.
Well, I don't think this comes as a huge surprise because BioNTech and Pfizer already had a huge order on their books from the European Union, but it's an order now that just got much bigger. There's been an additional 200 million doses ordered. That takes the total order to some half a billion, all of which are expected to come this year. And for Europeans anxious for a return to some form of normality, the news that 75 million of those doses will be delivered at the end of the second quarter, so just a few months away, no doubt it will be warmly welcomed. Now, it's important to note that, like most other governments that have ordered vaccines, the EU has spread the risk, if you will. They've ordered doses from a number of suppliers, including the UK's AstraZeneca and the American firm Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. But the fact that they have now almost doubled their order with BioNTech and Pfizer shows that they really are banking on this vaccine, which was largely developed in Germany, to help untangle themselves from this mess associated with the pandemic.
Let's stay with Germany, obviously hugely important to the European economy. How's the vaccine rollout going there?
Yeah, well, it certainly is important. In fact, it's Europe's biggest economy. So getting Germany back on track is really central for getting Europe back on track. And of course, Germany in some ways has built a global reputation as being a very efficient, very productive place to do business. But it seems that with its vaccine rollout, it's very much stuck in first gear. It's inoculated just over 3% of the eligible population here, still well below where the UK is and the United States, but also a number of its European neighbours. In recent days, we've seen countries like Spain and Greece and Portugal start to creep ahead of Germany. To add insult to injury as well, the AstraZeneca vaccine, which we know is supposed to be the easy one to deliver because it can be stored in a refrigerator, it has started to arrive here in numbers which reach well into the hundreds of thousands, and yet various reports are now emerging that in certain German regions, many local areas haven't really made a significant push yet giving this vaccine out.
What's the latest on the situation in the Netherlands? Still ongoing confusion about the state of its lockdown.
It was all thrown into chaos earlier this week when a court ruled that the government could not legally justify its use of its emergency nighttime curfew, and it has really caught the Dutch government off guard, and they've had to scramble to apply for an emergency injunction to keep that 9 p.m. national curfew in place. But this does add to an already tense situation in the Netherlands. We, of course, have seen in recent weeks some scenes of violence with anti-lockdown protesters clashing with police.
Well, staying with vaccine news, and the Hong Kong government is expected to approve China's Sinovac after a panel of local health experts gave unanimous backing to the jab. They say the vaccine is good enough for public use without the need to wait for official endorsement from the World Health Organization. But there are concerns the relatively low efficacy rate of the jabs will mean more people need vaccinations to create herd immunity. Earlier, I spoke to our Hong Kong correspondent, Richard Kimber, who began by explaining the local reaction to the news.
The panel's recommendation to approve Sinovac's jab in Hong Kong before the WHO has issued its own approval is facing local criticism on social media. Some netizens are calling on the panel of health experts to take the jab first to prove it's safe. Others accuse the panel of following orders from Beijing. The chairman of the government's advisory group, Professor Wallace Lau, is strongly dismissing that and dismissing concerns that Sinovac has yet to publish its final stage clinical trial data in a recognized journal.
We have actually used, you know, the same attitude as how we normally would peer review a study report, a clinical trial report, to be ready for publication in a learned journal. So we have actually gone through all the procedures as needed.
The panel gave unanimous recommendation for the jab after data they received from Sinovac showed the vaccine to have an overall efficacy rate of 50% and up to 62% when two doses are administered 28 days apart. Hong Kong Society of Hospital Pharmacists says the panel's review process is sufficient and that waiting for more trial data to be published might put Hong Kong at risk of falling behind with vaccinations. But the Society's president, William Choi, says he's still concerned that if the vaccine is only 50% effective, then it'll mean almost everyone in the city will need to be vaccinated in order to stand a chance of herd immunity. A professor of virology at Hong Kong's City University, Klaus Oesterrieder, says that despite the concerns, the likely arrival of Sinovac's jab will still benefit Hong Kong.
Sinovac vaccine is certainly better than no vaccine, certainly. I think it is in the ballpark with the other vaccines that have been developed.
So what's the latest rollout plan for the vaccinations?
Sinovac says the first batch of 1 million doses can arrive in Hong Kong as soon as Friday. That could potentially mean that if it's given formal government approval, it'll be ready for rollout ahead of the Pfizer-BioNTech jab, which was approved by the government last month, but currently not due to be ready for inoculations until early March. The government hasn't unveiled full details of its vaccination program yet, but media reports say medical workers and carers of the elderly will be among those to be given vaccination priority, along with aviation workers, who are a crucial part of maintaining the flow of air cargo to the city, which relies so heavily on imported goods. It's understood that there'll be more than 20 centres set up across the city, administering up to 2,500 doses a day. Only one type of vaccine is expected to be available at each centre, but when it comes to booking an appointment, the government has pledged to allow people to choose which vaccine they'll be given and choose their centre for booking accordingly.
That's Richard Kimber in Hong Kong, bringing us to the end of today's show. I'm Jagruthi Dave in Washington.
And I'm Benji Hyer in London. Next, it's Asia First with Arnold and Yasmin here on CNA 938. Stay tuned for that and have a great day.